Hey everyone, Christina here with a quick note before we start the episode. This is the first part in what will hopefully be a four-part series about Earth 6677, which is Tanner and Lindsay's extended Marvel Universe. So don't worry when the episode ends in the middle of a discussion topic, because we will be continuing this discussion in the coming months. So enjoy the show!
X-Men!
Hello, and welcome to Not If I Reboot You First. This is a podcast where we take properties and reinvent them before Hollywood has a chance to. It's a little bit like brainstorming fan fiction. Oh wait, that's the wrong introduction. Hello, and welcome to the Home for Wayward OCs. This is a podcast where friends and I talk about original characters, the good, the bad, and the self-inserts. And today I have two returning guests who are also my friends and also fellow co-hosts. Would you like to introduce yourselves or reintroduce yourselves?
Which one of us wants to go first?
You spoke first,
okay.
Yeah, you lost the game of chicken.
Yeah, I'm Lindsay, I use she, her pronouns.
I'm Tanner, they, them. And honestly, if we had a dollar for every time we said, hey, what if we just put Not If I Beat You First on hold and talked about our Marvel fanfiction as a podcast instead, we could afford to do it full time.
Yep.
I mean, look. Y'all chase your bliss. You're adults, and you have your own lives, and you can schedule your own hobbies. And I support that, and I support you two being happy.
Thank you.
Yay!
But speaking of Marvel, we're here today to discuss the extended cinematic universe that you two have been creating over the course of the last couple of years through your fan fictions. Is that correct?
Yes.
I mean, mostly it exists in our own heads, but yes.
This is called Mission Creep, the fan fiction.
Piece by piece, it is coming out in the written medium, yeah. So.
Before we get to the interdimensional madness, we need to start with, yeah. Lindsay, I think, needs to start with the Second World War.
Real, hold up. Sorry.
Actually, no, we should start by explaining what we're doing here, actually. Remember when I said no coherent thoughts?
Yeah, before we get fully into it, I would like to hear first, because obviously we're here talking about the extended Tanner and Lindsay cinematic universe of Marvel that you are cinematic? No.
So, just to make it easier on you to say, the shorthand, the shared universe we've been calling it, is just Marvel 6677.
Or 6677. Mm-hmm. Whichever one is easier for the mouth.
So, yeah, what got you two started?
Her. It's Lindsay's fault.
It's all my fault. Basically what happened was Agent Carter got canceled at season 2 on a fucking cliffhanger.
I'm warning you till we join you, Agent Carter.
Yeah. I, like many people, was not happy about the situation. I don't know who to blame on either the Marvel TV side or the Marvel movie side, because this was during the era where Ike Perlmutter was in charge of a whole bunch of Marvel stuff before Kevin Feige, you know, took over all of the adaptation stuff.
I think we can blame both of them.
I think we can blame Ike on Peggy's cancellation and Kevin on her girl bossification.
Yes, they both have a hand in my problems with how Peggy Carter has been handled for the past decade. And probably Joss Whedon, too, because Joss Whedon did not seem interested in anything Captain America.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I love to blame Joss Whedon.
I don't think we can blame Joss Whedon for everything. I think we can.
I think we should.
I blame Joss Whedon for giving Peggy Alzheimer's. So, anyway. I wanted to give Agent Carter a season 3 that would close out a whole bunch of plot lines that had been left dangling, like the whole who shot Jack Thompson is Peggy's brother. Mm-hmm. So Tanner and I did an episode of Not If So we did an episode about a hypothetical season 3 for Not If I Reboot You First.
Mm-hmm. On our parent show.
On the parent show. And it's very different from what we're actually writing right now. I've gone back and listened to it, and I am like, wow, totally different direction of what we're doing. And this is during the pandemic years, and I don't think I really started writing stuff down until like a couple months after that episode. And then I didn't start publishing my first fanfic for Marvel 6677 until about a year afterwards, when Ryan and I had moved into our second apartment after I got my current job.
Mm-hmm.
So that fanfic, Sixes and Sevens, which is based on a saying to describe something that's like a chaotic situation, is everything is in sixes and sevens. And the premise for that is like, I just wanted to flesh out a backstory for Michael Carter, who is Peggy's brother, who got like 5 minutes of screen time in season 2 of Season Carter, and he was supposed to be a major character in season 3. It was heavily implied by the original showrunner that he was the one who shot Jack Thompson, who was one of like the SSR guys who was sort of flirting with some people attached to Hydra. Long story. So during the original Not If I Reboot You First episode, Tanner was the one who suggested of making Michael a super soldier and giving him the moniker Union Jack. Union Jack is a...
Wait, I suggested that?
Yeah, you're the one who suggested combining him with Brian Falsworth.
I thought that was all you.
No, that was you.
Shh, just take the credit, Tanner. Take the credit.
Okay, if you say so.
That was you because you also suggested pairing him up with Roger. Because, like, Brian Falsworth and Roger Aubrey are, like, two of the first, like, canonical gay characters within Marvel, though they got a bit of a bury your gay situation. Brian has not returned since he died.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to bury your gays when they died in World War II, but yeah.
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 And you declare them gay retroactively.
Yeah.
So, building off of that, like, there was another character named Jacqueline Falsworth, who's Brian's sister. She becomes a superheroine, Spitfire. And she's got an interesting backstory, being a member of the SOE, the Special Operations Executive. She got bit by a vampire, kind of turns into a vampire, but it also awakens a bunch of powers. Also, she got a blood transfusion from the original Human Torch, Jim Hammond, not the more famous Human Torch, Johnny Storm. And yeah, she's one of the few speedsters within the Marvel comic universe. The MCU has used the Falsworth name a couple times for a few different characters, the most recent one being Olivia Colman. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. But like, all of the British superheroes are like super upper class. What if I made her working class? And I'm like, wait, Jacqueline Falsworth is such like a upper class name at the time. Like, I gotta merc this up. So using a combo of like Welsh last names and popular name and like a name generator for like Edwardian names, I came up with Emily Gower. She is like one of the pillars of this fanfic.
And I think
we did an episode about her.
I think you came on to, yeah, I think we did an episode with her.
So reference that episode about Emily. Also, it's kind of out of date. This is the updated version of that episode that will eventually become out of date in like 5 years.
I don't know. I mean, we're trying to stick closely to the plans that we've got and only like add additive things in instead of completely rewriting things anymore.
Well, again, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that led to Sixes and Sevens, where it's like the origin story for how Michael became Union Jack. And incidentally, some of Emily's powers waking up. She doesn't go full vampire until later, and doesn't get her full suite of powers until probably the end of World War II. Anyway, I did a sequel to that, where they're on a fake Greek island that I came up with called Fidonisi. And that's where they meet up with, like, the rest of the team that we're calling the Invaders. So we have Michael as Union Jack, Emily as Spitfire, there's these two Golden Age characters called Robert Frank and Madeline Joyce. They wind up married. They're the Wizard and Miss America. And
no one will ever be referred to as the Wizard. Even when I was writing a bit where I was doing like, oh, homages to their comic book names, I'm not calling him the Wizard.
That's just...
Yeah. Tanner and I now have, we now have baggage with the term Wizard.
Oh no, I just don't want to call a man a Wizard who in the comics wore a piss yellow suit.
Also, he got his powers by being bit by a mongoose.
He got a blood injection from a mongoose to give him the proportional speed of a mongoose when it's fighting a cobra.
It's very Golden Age.
Sure, why not?
So we're just like, no, he's a regular dude. He does carry an X gene. His children will be very powerful psychics, and he's the grandfather. He and Maddie are the grandparents of the Braddock siblings. But in the comics, they kind of did have a moment of prominence when they were floated as potential parents for Wanda and Pietro Maximoff back in the day. Before... Okay, is Wanda and Pietro are still Magneto, or again, Magneto's kids, right?
They're not saying biologically they're Magneto's kids again, but Wanda has acknowledged that Magneto was an important father figure for her, and Wanda and Polaris are kind of trying to be sisters. Okay. And also, I think Wanda has referred to Magneto's hot young clone as kind of a brother figure now, so it's like... They're calling them family, but they're still not saying, oh, actually, yeah, Wanda and Pietro are mutants again. They're still going with, they were abducted and experimented on, and that's how they got the superpowers.
Yeah.
Sure.
In our fanfic, they are mutants.
Yeah, yeah.
They're mutants, and they are the grandchildren of Magneto.
Yes, because we're trying to bring in linear time.
Yes. Yes, I say, with the timeline doc pulled up, which is 40 pages long.
And starts with, at the dawn of the universe.
When we actually get to, that part, when you're doing the editing, you might want to add in the intro to also Sprach Zarathustra.
I'll see if I could find a version that will be public domain.
Anyway, the rest of the team, so... I added in Pat Mason, who was originally, he's known as Thunderfist, he has a very powerful punch. He was originally from...
It was like a B-team of the Invaders.
Yeah, so he got kicked up to the A-team. Mark Anthony Todd, who originally goes by the Flaming Skull. Now, again, this is a Golden Age character, and his origin story was that he was a reporter who was in Japan. At one point, and he encountered an underground race of skeleton people who taught him how to light his head on fire and resist fire and also martial arts.
Marvel!
And as much as I love an underground race of skeleton men!
That's a bit much.
This one I am claiming credit for, because I am pretty sure that I'm the one who said, Lindsay, you should just make this guy a Ghost Rider.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, yeah, something like that. So I made him a Ghost Rider. He's originally from Kentucky. That's how I tie in one of the first like crossover things I've done with Old Gods of Appalachia, which is this really great horror anthology podcast. Y'all should check it out. It is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So in that version, he's like a student at the University of Kentucky. He's specializing in mining engineering because they have a mining school there. Which, yeah, it's Kentucky. He's from Harlan, Kentucky, which is a pretty hard done by place. This is like the center of some major coal wars and labor disputes that happened when Mark would have been a kid. And he gets picked by the Witch Queen, Daughter Dooley, to become the new vessel for a avenging angel that I found in the Book of Enoch called Cushiel. His job is to punish sinners in hell. And I thought, well, that's a perfect angel for a spirit of vengeance. So he becomes a Ghost Rider. Ta-da!
Hey, why not?
Next is Anthea. The name I gave to a character called, alternatively, Venus, or Victoria Star. She's yet again another Golden Age character who's backstory has been retconned to heck and back. So in this version, she is a siren, like, from Homer. Her father is the river god Achilles, who might have been a sea god, according to your research, Tanner.
Yeah, I was looking up river deities, and it's like, oh yeah, the Meyer river deity, Achilles, may have, like, been some kind of transformation translation of a sea deity from Norse mythology that migrated down to the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Or pre-Norse, even, because we don't know jack shit about pre-Norse.
Yeah, and he might have went around the Mediterranean for a bit before coming back to, like, the Mycenaean Greeks. Because he also picked him out because he's got bull symbolism, and that's a whole thing with the Minoans.
Yes.
Yeah, because Anthea's entire backstory is tied with the Theron eruption that probably helped end the Minoan civilization. we'll get to that. That's a Tanner story. Anyway, her mother is Terpsichore, who's the muse of dance, and thus Anthea is a granddaughter of Zeus. So at some point, Anthea gets very full of herself and thinks that I am so beautiful, I can pretend to be the love goddess herself. I'll just go by her Roman name. And she gets into a lot of trouble for that. Because... yeah, the Greek gods are pretty, they don't like that sort of stuff. So she gets stuck on this island called Phidonisi, and she's in charge of guarding this very important artifact from the quote-unquote Atlantean civilization. We'll talk about that when we get into the timeline, our interpretation of Atlantis. Anyway, this is the Serpent Crown. This is going to be important to the current fic. Anyway, basically, they get this crown, they blow up this island, Emily gets her first two bites, because in this world, to become a vampire, you have to be bitten three times and survive. And then in some future one-shot, I'm gonna describe her final bite that turns her into a full vampire. The thing about Emily's powers, though, is that her mutant side gives her, like, super healing, super strength, super speed, and that kind of counteracts a lot of the weaknesses vampires have, which makes her effectively a daywalker. Anyway, so then do we want to go chronologically with the fix? Like, you talk about, like, Villa Layla?
Yeah, I think that we might as well do it that way. So, all right, this is my first entry, because I was like, hey, Lindsay, it seems like you've got a lot of stuff planned. Would you like me to, like, ghostwrite or fill some stuff in for you? And she's like, sure. and now it's my fault that I think this beast became as big as it was.
Again, mission creep.
Yeah. I'll do an anthology series where it's like they all do, like, the debriefing, and now that they're all been pretty exposed to supernatural, super science stuff, what if they just talked about their past experiences with that? And now they're like, maybe I wasn't a crazy 10-year-old. Maybe there really were space aliens or something. And then I used that to plant seeds for future events. And I was like, what if he paid off these future events? And now we're like, okay, now here's what happens in the 80s. Here's what happens in the 90s. But the Cliff Notes version of The Haunting of Villa Layla, which is inspired by the Doctor Who episode titled The Haunting of Villa Diodati, which itself was inspired by the actual Diodati writing sessions, where everyone was like, what if we wrote scary stories? What if we wrote a whole bunch of horror stories so that Lord Byron would be too distracted to try and have sex with us? We'll have to talk to him, but it's a small price to pay.
The world got Frankenstein from it, so yay.
So let me go remind myself what happened in each one. So, the first one is the most important one, because it starts with Edith Harker, who's the granddaughter of Mina Harker?
Of Jonathan and Mina Harker, yeah. She is Emily's girlfriend at the time.
Yes. Well, she pretty much becomes Emily's girlfriend when she returns, because at the time when the fic starts, they just found her, like, walking bedraggled out of the desert, and they're like, oh wow, we thought you were dead. Want to come to this house with us and relax?
I had Edith in, like, the second chapter of the first fic, and I established her as the girlfriend. She was just waiting in Cairo.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, waiting in Cairo, and then she had to, like, leave on business, and then there's, like, a brief re-meeting with Emily, and they're like, oh my gosh, you're okay, okay, we're still in the middle of the Second World War, so shit's constantly going down, bye.
So anyway, Edith is a member of an organization called FANNY, First Aid Nursing Yeomanry. She's an ambulance driver, and this would have happened around the Tunisia campaign, which, like, helped kick the Axis out of North Africa, finally. So, yeah, she had a rough go as an ambulance driver.
Yep.
Anyway, as you were saying, Tanner.
Anyways, so, Edith talks to the gathered people about how way, way back in her family history, there was a man named Johan von Helsing who, after his son passed away from a mysterious blood disease, he went searching for answers, and eventually the answers found him in the form of the vampire bride, Velana. And she was like, come to Latveria and meet me there. And so he did, and she tried to eat him because she was just playing with her food. But then he was rescued by Victoria Vladimirescu, who was a Romani woman who had been learning magic. And she decided to save this guy just because she had a feeling that maybe he'd be useful just to get information out of. And because he's a random white man from the Netherlands who basically stumbled into their village half eaten by vampires, they took a cursed artifact that they'd been hanging on to and they slammed it on his face. And they said, you are now the... Oh, what was it? The Mask of Death? Who is he now?
The Dread Knight.
The Dread Knight. Dread Knight is an already existing Marvel character who appeared in, like, 2 comics, I think. Apparently he was a friend of Victoria Frankenstein, who I don't even know if we're getting into all that stuff yet. But the point is, we stuck a skull mask on Abraham von Helsing, and he gained powers, and now he won't turn into a vampire. And Victoria, who had been learning magic from her mentor, Jordi Dinjalos, who's also Romani, they're basically the protectors of the village. And von Helsing ends up protecting their village for about a year as well, now because he's got powers now. And eventually, he decides that he and Victoria come up with a plan to take the fight to Victoria, or not, to Velana, the vampirist.
Velana.
And they slay her. And then everything's okay. He can take the mask off. Oh yeah, because the deal with the mask is that it'll stop you from turning into a vampire, but if you ever leave the mountain that lays its shadow over our village, your blood will boil.
Uh-oh.
This is Mount Wandragor, which is, like, the center of evil.
Yeah, there's a temple of, like, vile darkness at the top that the dark demon C'thon constructed.
Comic books.
Anyways, but they slay Velana, so he doesn't have to worry about turning into a vampire, so von Helsing goes back to Netherlands and never has to worry about vampires again.
It feels like a spoiler. He will have to worry about vampires again.
Well, then everyone's like, so you're saying that you're Edith Harker, descendant of the fictional character Edith Harker, and friends of fictional character Abraham von Helsing? And Edith explains, oh, so what happened was, after von Helsing died, during the estate sale, before any of his actual friends could get there, Bram Stoker got into his house and just bought all of his notes and left, and we didn't know what had happened until we all showed up in a book one day.
Thus, Dracula is a fictional property within this universe.
But it's also real! Then we get a story Patch shares about how he encountered a strange wolf in the Scottish Highlands, and it turned out that strange wolf was actually a woman. And then I reveal that I don't go too deep into the details on this one, but basically it turns out that woman is going to be the grandmother of the New Mutants character Wolfsbane.
Nice.
Also, there's a terrible priest, because if there's one thing you need to know about Wolfsbane, is that there is a terrible priest. Calvinism.
Yeah.
Oh, Calvinism.
And then Robbie tells a story. Robbie tells a story about he was chasing down a Hydra spy who was located somewhere in England. And then he finds out that the Hydra spy was doing experiments on bees! And then he gets eaten by his own bees! But then years later, there's a mysterious bees death that Robbie doesn't know about. And I sure hope that no one has to deal with a Nazi made out of bees later.
That's okay, Spider-Man will fight him.
Also, I made a... So, like, in the comics, this is a character. This is a real Marvel character. His name is Swarm. He's a Nazi made of bees.
Yes.
Punch Nazi. But also there's something inherently hilarious about a Nazi made of bees.
Yeah.
His whole thing was that, like, he crossbred Africanized killer bees, which I had to do a whole deep dive on, like, okay, what even is an Africanized killer bee? And apparently it is just, like, a specific type of, like, crossbreed between North American bees and African bees that, like, for whatever reason did cause them to become more aggressive, but I don't think they're, like, super killer. But I was like, well, you know what's in Africa and Marvel? Wakanda. So what if these were, like, naturally vibranium-enhanced bees that are super, super fine on their own, but somehow this guy got a hold of them and his experiments, and they went crazy!
I'm just gonna write vibranium bees in my notes real quick.
Yeah, then we got the chapter that I had to do so much research on that I almost didn't have enough room in my footnotes at the end.
Because oh my God.
We've been citing our sources in the end notes, and I didn't even know there was a limit on how much text you could put in there, but there is! So Anthea tells a story about the fall of the Minoans.
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically... So you know how which mountain was it? Mount Etna? No.
Thera, which is now the island of Santorini.
Yeah, Mount Thera. Yeah, have you ever looked at the island of Santorini and noticed that there's, like, a large circular chunk of it missing? That's because it exploded thousands of years ago and almost completely wiped out the Minoan culture.
Yeah.
And Theo was there, baby. She saw the whole thing. And the whole thing started because Odin had finally had enough of Hela's shit. And so they had brought the fight. They basically crash landed in ancient Minoa and were fighting each other. And the fought got so hard that Hela just decided to erupt Mount Thera. And then the goddess Ishtar shows up. No, Astarte. The goddess Astarte shows up. Who was probably an inspiration for Aphrodite.
Yeah.
And there's nothing saying definitely that Astarte's cult was passing through from ancient Mesopotamia through the Mediterranean at this time, but there's nothing saying that she couldn't have either. So in all my notes is like, this is artistic license. Do not use me as a reference on your papers. So Astarte helps Odin cast a spell that seals Hela in limbo. And I don't mean limbo as in, oh, she's trapped in a mysterious place and she can't get out. It's like, no, she is in capital L limbo. We'll get there.
Yes.
We'll get to that.
Limbo is a place you can go there and you shouldn't.
Yeah.
And Anthea, who, like, the morning before everything exploded, Anthea was like, I'm a 10-year-old demigod, and I'm declaring that I'm trans. And her parents are like, that's amazing. And then, yeah, the point of this is Anthea going, wow, my whole world just exploded, but Astarte is so cool. I think I'll base my entire life upon her. This will have no repercussions later. and then it also ends with Terpsichore and the other muses gathering, like, okay, well, everything just exploded. I guess we need to summon the Greek gods from space. Because the Greek gods are from space. Don't worry about it.
I won't.
Approximately 75 of all Greek gods are from space. We get a chapter from Maddie where she talks about meeting... there's an obscure Marvel character who originated a mobile game. Her name is Guillotine. And she's kind of like, what if the Punisher was a French revolutionary with a possessed sword? And so Maddie meets... the most recent for her incarnation of Guillotine. And she's like, I'm possessed by an evil sword and I can use it to kill Nazis, but also I'm worried that I will do horrible things after the war ends. So when you find me, can you put a bullet in my head? And Maddie's like, that sucks, but I guess so. I'm speedrunning this because I don't want to get lost in the weeds, unless they're fun weeds. Speaking of fun weeds, I don't know why, but at some point I was like, hey, what if Ghost Rider boinked the Mole Man? So while Mark Anthony Todd was a teen, before he became a Ghost Rider, he and some other teens from his town were like, let's go swimming, let's go skinny dipping at the sinkhole. And one of those kids was the weird kid named, oh hang on, let me find his name.
His name is Harvey Elder.
Yeah, Harvey Elder. He's the weird nerd that reads books. And it was like, he's a weird nerd. But Mark Anthony Todd is like, yes, but somehow this weird nerd has bewitched me. So they all go skinny dipping. And then they get trapped in a slasher movie because they get attacked by moloids.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then And then Ajax from the Eternals shows up. Selma Hayek kills the Molides with a shotgun and saves the surviving teens. And then Mark and Harvey bang.
Sure.
But then they go to different universities.
Yeah, they're going to grow up and, like, Mark Anthony Todd becomes a spy and a ghostwriter, and Harvey Elder is going to grow up to become a physicist and later the Mole Man.
There'll be a story about that.
And then also when we flash back to the present of when these stories are being shared, because everyone's, like, sitting around a campfire and, like, hey, here's this supernatural thing that happened to me in the past. So fun fact, here's another thing that exists. But also during this, Mark Anthony has, like, been trying to flirt with Pat, and everything is going over Pat's head because Pat is ace as all hell. The most ace man. This man reacts to nothing.
It's amazing.
And Mark is caught up in his feelings. He's like, I'm salty at you because you won't be homosexual with me. And Pat's like, what? There's homosexuals here?
Everybody in this cast is some flavor of queer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, like, Pat, obviously Pat isn't phobic or anything. He's just like, he did not pick up on anything.
Yeah. Mood.
Then we get to Roger's story, where Roger got to, he stayed at a haunted castle at Levin's Hall in Cumbria when he was, preteen. 13. 13, yes. And he met a little girl named Alona, and he befriended her, and then some weird stuff happened, and it turned out that this little girl had psychic powers, and she was chased by two other people with psychic powers. And then Mark, or not Mark.
Roger.
Cut that. And then Roger was able to fight them off, and the people with the psychic, or, well, the woman with psychic powers exploded, and now she, the ghost haunting Levin's Hall is now just, like, her in, like, a psychic echo of her. And Illa didn't have any psychic stuff left after, so everything was fine. And then the other guy who was trying to kidnap the little girl had to go talk to his boss, who just happened to be Ego the Living Planet. And Ego the Living Planet then exploded this man. And this is just, like, my real specific, like, okay, so we'll bring in Mr. Knife from the comics. Mr. Knife is actually Star-Lord's comic book father, so wouldn't it be funny if he interacted with Star-Lord's movie father, and then the movie father killed him? And also, Ilona is based off of Girl Moon, who is another daughter, Ilya the Living Moon. Who is the comics daughter of Ego the Living Planet.
Girl Moon?
Yeah, she showed up in Moon Girl.
Sure.
And I was like, yeah, this shit's wild. Let's put it in. And then we get Michael remembers this time he was a student at Cairo University. And he was like, here's a weird thing that happened one time. A staff that seemed to be associated with Amit seemed to possess me. And basically, it's like the staff that Harrow got in the Moon Knight TV show. It was found by Michael first, and Amma tried to, like, make him her avatar. And then Khonshu, because there's a temple of Khonshu just close enough, Khonshu was like, no, no, become my avatar instead. Ah! And they're both fighting over him, and he manages to just break three of both of them.
By whopping sure. his head against a wall.
Yeah, like, I need a concussion. Also, that ends with Khonshu, like, his consciousness sitting in the temple, and it's like, Michael Khonshu was weak, but at least he wasn't so weak to fall for Amit's temptation. He could have made a decent fist, but, oh well. I'm sure it won't be another 70 years until someone else shows up. And it's like, oh honey, it's 1937.
88 years.
88 years, baby girl. Oh yeah, also in that fic, it's implied that Anthea used to, like, be dating Khonshu, because they're both birds.
Birds of a feather.
Yeah.
I very much like Amit's in the Moon Knight show when Amit shows up and she makes a commentary on about how bad Khonshu looks, and everyone's like, wait, did Khonshu look like used to look like a real bird? Was he not always bones? Anyways, chapter 9 is the most important one, because chapter 9 is the one where Emily shares the story about how three times in her childhood, she was visited by a figure who called herself the Faustian Queen. And she was like this mysterious fairy eldritch being, all with like the horns and shit. And every time she showed up, she looked real messed up and didn't fit in with reality. So it's like trying to find each time that I described her. Oh, also, all of the Faustian Queen's line are written in
iambic pentameter.
Iambic yeah. pentameter. Yeah.
Nice.
The first time the Faustian Queen appears, she has hair as white as a corpse, I mean snow, skin gray like death, I mean stone, and a cloak the color of blood, I mean autumn leaves. And the queen is like, oh, you found my necklace. I'll give you a wish if you give it back to me. And Emily's like, I know. Listen, I'm Welsh. I know about fairies. I'm good. Here's your necklace. Bye. And the second time, the Faustian Queen shows up like a pool of snow water. Emily finds herself lost in the woods. And she's like, oh, Faustian Queen, you're up here, aren't you? And Faustian Queen's like, yep. She shows up in a reflecting pool and she's like, all the boys will love you. And Emily's like, yeah, I don't need your wish to do that. Bye. And then the third time the Faustian Queen shows up, it's like Christmas break as Emily's on the train back. and there's a knock on the cabin door and Emily like opens it up and Marilou pops in. Hello, I'm a singing horse skeleton. Tra-la-la-la-la.
Yeah, Christina, do you know what a Marilou is?
Yes, I do. Mostly because of our mutual friend Annie Creighton.
Ah.
The Christmas horse that you must appease with treats and song.
Yeah.
Or else it kills you.
It's literally a horse skull on a stick.
Mm-hmm.
And Emily, like, at this point, Emily is panicking because she does not know what to do, and her aunt is in the cabin, too, so now she's worried that someone else might get in trouble. And she's like, she can't remember the verse that she's supposed to sing back. She's like, I don't have anything, please just go away! And then, the door crashed open, clattering off its hinges, and a horse's skull, bedecked in ribbons and baubles, was on the other side. It clacked its jaw open and closed several times as its neck stretched into the room, and as it did so, Emily saw a series of poles holding up its long neck. Each one was being held by a tiny little fellow, all of them dressed in holiday baubles as well, though few of them seemed real. They were like creatures drawn from paper and cut out, moving in a way that she could barely comprehend. So in this, I want you to picture, like, in Madoka Magica, where they go into like the witch's place and they see all the familiars that are like the messed up paper cutout guys. That's what I'm picturing. When yeah. Lindsay read it, she was like, sure. Oh, these are like Garden of Earthly Delights boys.
Yeah.
I know what the Garden of Earthly Delights is. I haven't seen Madoka Magica.
Some look like rodents with the faces of humans, others like tiny human bodies, but wings and heads of insects. The way Marilou craned around the room made it seem like they'd been steering it at the start of whatever this was, but at some point the figure had decided to move on its own volition, and they were just dragged along for the ride. They chittered unintelligibly as their poles waved around the cabin, some of them getting flung into the luggage above Emily and her aunt. And then the queen appeared. She was different again, now looking like she'd been cast from wax, and hair nothing but flowing flames that encircled her face. For a brief moment it seemed like she had no eyes, but then Emily realized they were simply closed tight. Fair Christmas be upon ye, Emily, to you and yours throughout the coming year, should you accept the boon I offer thrice. And then, yeah, Faustian Queen offers her more stuff. Emily's like, Emily's trying to distract her, and she's like, do you normally walk around with Marilou? And Faustian Queen, I am the mother of thy Marilou, perhaps the grandmother of a grey mare, kin of Krampus, Perctus Patrician, Turan's taskmaster, and among the stars, my crimson abbess and my bone-white Jacques have traveled far from where I made them once. And yes, that was my Gem Jammer shout-out. The crimson abbess and bone-white Jacques.
I love a Gem Jammer shout-out.
And then the Faustian Queen is like, listen, I'll get you the world's best husband. And Emmy's like, that's a nice thought, but I'm not going to do any bargaining on an empty stomach. And so then she pulls out a sandwich and hands it to Marilou. She's like, want a sandwich? And Marilou like grabs the sandwich, scarfs it down its throat.
Don't worry about it.
And then pieces out. And then the Faustian Queen glowers. Emily hands her the little bit left of the sandwich. And the queen takes it and she's like, I fucking hate how smart you are. I'll find something to give you. And she bounces. And Emily's like, and yeah, that was the last I saw of the queen. I never saw her again. And then we flash back to a fourth time. Emily's father is dying.
Uh-oh.
She has no way to solve this. She's panicking. She's freaking out. And then the queen shows up. And the queen's like, I will save your father.
I will save your father, but...
Yeah.
Also, it's important that when Emily finally agrees to... When Emily finally agrees to, like, get a boon from the queen, she also starts speaking in iambic pentameter.
Uh-oh.
She also specifically words it, though. So, the queen says, Wouldst thou bid me heal him? I would, Emily replied, in such a way that he is still the man he was before the illness took to him, and such a way that he shall not again be struck by sickness in his natural life, and only meets his end from his old age.
Hey, get specific.
You have to.
Good and then for her.
Because all this time, the queen has been like, I'll give you a boon in payment because you gave me my necklace back. That's what's been going on the whole years. So the queen's nod smiles warmly. Thou still doth pick thine words so wisely, and to thine credit I shall thus ensure thine father's health is restored instantly, and his grave shall remain a distant sight. Now, payment for thine boon is such a thing that doth exceed a bauble returned. A life equates a life in every book, and from thee someone else I must lay claim. Your firstborn child shall be a lovely gift, and they I shall adorn among my court. And it was like, hey, that's not fair.
Yeah.
A deal's a deal. The father healed, my dear. And thou art not the clever girl you were. Thou couldst have let a natural thing occur, but you invoked me, and thee I did serve. But lest thee try to find a way to flee and break my deal, I'll take your voice as well. A tinge to bring thee... A tinged to... I have no idea what word this was. I wrote this years
tunged,
ago.
A tinged, which is like the Welsh version of a gaze.
A
giash. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. A tongued to bring thee a peace of mind. Fade future contracts from thy memory. And then the door opens. Emily's mom is like, your dad's not dying anymore. And Emily's like, what a crazy happy hantum stance that I have no memory of making a deal. I've released the posthumous queen three times and my future baby is fine.
Yeah.
And we haven't gotten to this point, but in later instances, we are going to find that, like, Emily can remember, but whenever she tries to act on it or tell someone, like, she gets brain fog and forgets, and she gets tongue-tied and she can't say anything.
Yeah, it's like,
oh,
it's
boy.
Like when you go to get something in another room, but you forget, like, when you get to the room, it's like you forgot why you're there.
Mm-hmm. Mood.
She does find a loophole for this, though.
But yeah, but then the sandstorm that had been trapping them in the villa for 3 days passes. I'm sorry?
Oh, I was just saying that Emily does find a loophole to her Tungan situation.
Yes. That is future stuff, yes. But yeah, that pretty much concludes Villa Layla. They're released from the sandstorm that had been trapping them in there, and they're able to go about their duties. And the next duty is, well, let's check. I think the next one is you... have them, half of them go raid an island, another island.
Yeah.
So let's go back to Lindsay.
Okay. So there's a house in the mountains. It was supposed to be, originally I had it set in Latveria, but then I switched it to an island I came up with called Gorgon Island. It's off the coast of Morocco. It's a Hydra holdout. It's where this other fairly obscure Hydra villain called Warrior Woman, Julia Koenig, who also gets super soldier-fied. She's a mad scientist sort of lady. That's where her lab is. So there is a spy within Hydra who's working for the British. Her name is Gisela Brandt. This is an OC I created based partially off of a character from a 2010 comic, like Captain America comic, called Trudy something. Anyway, Gisela... Mm-hmm. works for the anti-Nazi German resistance. She gets recruited by the British intelligence to infiltrate Hydra basically as a mole. And her job is to track where POWs are disappearing to, because Hydra prefers using POWs. They think that they're a lot more healthier than concentration camp prisoners. So they're using these POWs for experiments. And then... Gisela apparently does her job a little too well, and she gets transferred over to Gorgon Island, and it's like, oh crap, we gotta get her. She is way too valuable for her to accidentally fall into Hydra hands and, like, spill the beans on a lot of operations that she's very critical for. So Emily Pat, Edith, Anthea, and Mark get set to rescue Gisela. And it's on that island that we also get introduced to another very obscure Golden Age character called John Steele. He is basically Marvel's equivalent of John Carter of Mars, but during the American Civil War, he fought for the Union instead of the Confederates. Anyway, John got stuck in on like this weird version of Mars by this god called Abyss after he like chased a whole bunch of Confederate guerrillas into a cave in Texas, and yada yada yada, he now has superpowers because Abyss did some weird things to him. And Abyss is tied to some stuff that's going to come up in Phantom Pain. Anyway, those two get rescued.
And many other things after.
Those two get rescued, and they also destroy a Hydra's attempt at building a railgun. And now they got an island. Over to Tanner's side.
Yes, so while this was happening... we go over to my fanfic, which is called Head First Slide into Latveria on a Bad Bet by Fall Out Boy. that is a reference to a Fall Out Boy song title. All of the chapter titles in the fanfic are Fall Out Boy lyrics. but prior to this, we also, there's like a little story that's just like brief one shots where called Radio Chatter. One of the first ones is like Maddie and Michael pitching to the
General Holloway.
What are they called?
General Holloway. He's based off of a Golden Age character called the Angel. He's just a dude who fights crime. Anyway.
Yeah, he's their like commander essentially for all their invader stuff. And they pitched to him, what if we like just created a persona for Michael? We're gonna call him Union Jack, and it's basically plausible deniability for the British government, where it's like, it's an agent, quote-unquote, of the Brits, but they're, like, a rogue agent, and they're just acting in the Allies' best interest without actually answering to them. Doing mysterious feats of phenomenal superhuman abilities.
And he could be everywhere.
Anywhere. Anyone. And that's how the Union Jack persona comes to be.
Yeah.
Hey, go for it.
So, meanwhile, in Latveria, Victor Von Doom is a shitty teen.
I've heard.
But he has a good excuse for it, because it's Nazi-occupied Latveria. And also, okay, my idea for Latveria in this world, for one thing, we did end up combining a lot of the various Balkan and Eastern European countries into, like, just either Sokovia or Latveria for our fic, because you ever look at a map of the Eastern Europe in the Marvel Universe, God, they've just been carving chunks out of Romania for the past, like, 60 years.
Yeah, I have a vague memory of y'all, like, saying, like, hey, Christina, do you want to draw us a map of, like, all of the countries that exist in Marvel in Eastern Europe? And I was like, I need specific instructions.
Yeah, so my idea for Latveria specifically is that, like, at some point it became there were a lot of Romani settlers in it, because there was a king who was very sympathetic to them. An idea kind of similar to how there is a large Jewish population in Prague, because there was a sympathetic ruler there. Unfortunately, the problem with the monarchy is that it changes real quick, and all the political stuff can change real quick too. So while not as many Romani would have been displaced from Latveria as other people with changed political climates and them being blamed for whatever they want to blame them for, because they get blamed for everything, It kind of gained this reputation of, oh, it's the country of the Gieslers, because, you know, it's Europe, they're all terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And a significant population remained there even as the royal family started turning against them more and more. Victor Von Doom is, as far as he knows, him and his mentor, Jordi Gingzalos, that's a familiar name, and they're the last survivors of Zafiro Village. Huh, that's the village that Abraham von Helsing found himself in years and years ago. I'm sure there's no connection. Anyways, Victor tries to infiltrate a Hydra base with, like, three of his friends, and he sees how his three friends get murdered by Nazis because they're teens and they're not good at this, but also they're Nazis and they're terrible and they will kill someone for the crime of being Romani. It's not, we don't have to explain what a Nazi is, you know.
Yeah, yes.
So Victor's traumatized and he flees back home, and Dirty is like, okay, well, let's get on the radio again. Maybe we can try again to get some allied help. And they finally get through, and they're like, okay, we're going to send Union Jack and the Invaders. And Victor's like, oh, this is the best news ever. So we only get half of them because the other half were stealing an island. So we end up with Maddie, Roger, Robert, and Michael. Mm-hmm. During the planning stages, they also learn, like, Michael learns that Georgie has some magical ability, just like the Georgie we met years and years ago. And eventually, over the course, it will be revealed that, like, oh, yeah, Georgie is immortal. He tried to join the Sanctum's, or...
The Sorcerers at Camartage.
Yeah, he tried to join the Sorcerers at Camartage, and they kicked him out because he was Romani. But while he was going, he stole the staff of the Living Tribunal, and so now he's immortal. And, but he's also, he explains that he made a promise to never teach Victor any magic, even though Victor really, really wants to learn magic. Teach me magic, Georgie. I'm sure nothing will go wrong if I, Victor Von Doom, learn magic. Anyways, we also cut over to the current prince of the royal family, who is Prince Rodolfo Vladimir Gonero Hasan Mangegi Fortunov. And we learn that he has been turned into a vampire by Kenneth Crichton, the same guy who's been trying to vampirize Emily.
Hey.
And then Rodolfo eats his own father, and so now he's the crown prince. And he, for his present, for his coronation gift, he wants to exterminate the entire Romani population because he's terrible and he's thrown his league in with the Nazis. And so the invaders and Georgie and Victor storm the Hydra base that Victor tried to get into before. Mm-hmm. They basically find a giant generator and some other tech, including a mysterious flight suit. They get ambushed. Robert gets attacked while he's with Victor, and it is Victor's fault because he was really gung-ho and wasn't watching their six. So Georgie has to run down there to help them, but because he's doing that, he's not able to protect everyone else. And the base explodes, and it, like, Georgie has to teleport Robert and Victor out. But that uses up the last of his strength after already using it to basically blow up the base. And so Georgie finally passes away, the powers of the Staff of the Tribunal fading from him. And in his last moments, he's able to give Victor his diary. And then they try and flee. And then several of them get caught by Nazis. Maddie and Robert and Victor get caught by the prince's forces. Also during this, Maddie discovers that she's a mutant with a compelling voice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she tells you to do the thing, and you do the thing.
She's basically a Bene Gesserit. Because I am deep in the Dune stuff right now, too.
I think I read Dune a while back. So I have a vague memory of what a Bene Gesserit is. Or Gesserit, excuse me.
So while they're in prison, Victor discovers that he still has the journal. So he starts reading it. And so he discovers, while reading this journal, that Victoria and Abraham Van Helsing fell in love during his time in Zafiro Village, and Syndrome Voice
got busy!
There is also a prophecy. Hang on, let me find the right chapter. The woman of magic from Zafiro and the man of science from lands beyond, their union shall shake the world, and my lord shall ensure that it shakes in his favor. This is something that V'Elanna told to Victoria as V'Elanna was about to die. And Georgie, like, afterwards, Georgie is like, I don't think you should keep the child. And Victoria is like, yeah, but, like, I never thought I'd have time to have a family, period. And also, we already determined that it's twins, so maybe just that fact proves that this is not what the family refers to, or what the prophecy refers to. So she has her twins. At some point, one of them will return to the Netherlands to learn more about his father, and that's how we're going to eventually get Rachel Van Helsing, existing Marvel character. Mm-hmm. The other one stays behind, and then she has a daughter, and then that daughter marries a doctor, a man of science, from Germany, Werner Von Doom. This woman's name? Victoria Von Doom. No, that's not right. Cynthia Von Doom. Because Victoria was slain in battle, and so Geordie started teaching her descendants magic. But Cynthia Von Doom, allegedly her magic made her a target, and so then Geordie determined that he would never teach magic to Victor so that he would not also become a target. obviously things aren't going to work out that well. Further reading will reveal to Victor, through a spell embedded in the very diary, it catapults his consciousness back in time to when Cynthia made herself a target, when the reality of the situation was his father had been killed by the royals because he was summoned to help cure the prince's mother. And then when that failed, they blamed him for killing her and they executed him instead. Cynthia, mad with grief, she makes a deal with C'thon to bolster her magic. She says, I want to have the power to rival the Scarlet Witch.
Uh-oh.
So she gets all of that and none of the control. And even though she's able to slaughter all the prince's forces that are sent after her, she also terrifies the village. The village turns on her and it turns against itself. And that's how it's not able to defend itself when the second wave of soldiers arrive. Cynthia flees with the infant Victor up Mount Wundagore, uses everything in her power to keep him safe as she slowly dies of exposure. Georgie finds them in their last moments. And while this is all happening, Cynthia is speaking to the current Victor because she's like, I can't respond to you. This is a recorded message, basically, but I know that the spell I've enacted is going to bring you to this moment. And I need you to know that you should use everything at your disposal to avenge us. And Victor's like, this is great news. I love you so much, Mom. And then while the prince, like, back in the present, the prince is taunting Robert and Maddie. And then he's like, no one will come to save you. And then Roger and Michael burst in like Kool-Aid men. So just two indestructible gay Kool-Aid men. We forgot to mention that at this point, Roger, he was a POW and he got experimented on by Whitehall.
Yeah.
And he discovered that he was inhuman. Now he can turn himself into diamond.
Sure.
So now we have, like, the super soldier Michael, who, like, everyone calls him a marble statue, and then inhuman Roger, who can turn himself into diamond. It's something about a mirror and reflections and similes, metaphors and themes.
Look, we can talk about that in a bit.
Gay rocks. So Victor dons the flight suit that the Noctis have been working on, and he just goes into a full brawl against the prince while the other four invaders, like, take out all the normal soldiers. Victor eventually is able to absolutely destroy the prince. He does rip his heart out.
Need I remind you, he is 17.
He is 17 years old! He's having such a normal time!
His last name is also Von Doom, and plus, was Victor Von Doom ever going to have a normal anything?
Yeah. Also, he does rip out the prince's heart, that is the first time he declares kneel before Doom. And then he hears the soldiers about to open fire on him, and then the Latverian locals are like, oh, we don't have to obey this guy anymore, and then they all start routing the Nazi forces.
Nice.
And yeah, Latveria is liberated, kind of, sort of. Robert has to assure Victor, is like, hey, you need to, like, stay on guard because you killed a political leader in front of everyone and someone might come to get you and get revenge. And Victor's like, it's fine. I'm Victor Von Doom. Nothing can go wrong for me.
Also, remember your proximity to the Soviet Union and you are not a Stalin guy.
Yeah. I'm sure everything will work out fine and Victor won't have to flee to America in like 10 years. Now, then we get into Phantom Pain. With me and Lindsay now, we are fully collaborating. We are going back and forth and like adjusting each other's stuff. Like, you take this group and we'll take this group and bada 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 bada.
First it just started with me and then I started stalling it. At some point, because, oh my god, this is the big show. This is the big one.
This is truly the monster. We're like, we finally finished this chapter. Checks word count. This is now 3 chapters.
We literally had to split our most recent chapter into 2 chapters.
I do not envy you. Having to edit writing is sometimes a struggle.
Well, but
you have two brains working on it.
There's so much meat to get through, but we want to make sure that all the characters' like internal turmoil is represented. So,
real quick, why don't you give me give me your best to be continued?
When we return, there's gonna be goo.
So much goo.
Tanner can be found on social media @SparkyUpstart or @SparkyYoungUpstart.
Tanner is a contributor on the Digimon Actual Play podcast Binary Break. Lindsay can be found on social media at LindsayM476. They have two podcasts together, Not If I Reboot You First, on social media at NIIRYFpod, and Pokemon Adventures in the Millennium, on social media at PKMN_Millennium. Their Earth 6677 fanfiction can be read on Archive of Our Own under the series name The Invaders and at earth-6677.tumblr.com. The Home for Orbit OCs is a part of the Corner Podcast Network. We can be found through Acast and your local podcasting platform of choice. Our theme song is Violet by Poddington Bear, courtesy of the Free Music Archives. We can be reached at waywardocpod@gmail.com or at waywardocpod on Twitter and Blue Sky. This podcast is partly recorded on the ancestral lands of the Kiakapui, Kaw, Osage, and the Osheti Chukawan. If you'd like to talk about Wayward or the other Corner Podcast Network shows, we have a Tumblr at cornerpodcastnetwork.tumblr.com and our own Discord server. The invite should be pinned on our social media, but if not, message one of the show accounts and we can get you set up. We are always looking for guests to talk about their original characters, so drop us a line if you're interested. And as with all podcasts, it's super helpful if you can subscribe and review us on your listening platform of choice and recommend us to a friend, because that helps us to reach a wider audience and brighten more people's days. So, thank you all for listening. This has been the Home for Weird OCs, and we hope you enjoyed your stay.
Smile, baby!
And also, much like Cerebro, this is much like the Spiral episode. These episodes are just going to go and go and go, and no one's going to have any coherent thoughts. And honestly, Christina, we're not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with us now.
I'm aware of this.
Unfortunately, I am Mojo, Tanner is the Majordomo, and you are Ricochet Rita tied to the bow of the interdimensional ship.
I mean, does that mean that I'm a figurehead? Is this a stick up? Are you sticking me up on my own podcast?
By the end of this, you're going to have six arms, an aviator cap, and boots with the fur.
With the fur?
With the fur!
You'll become the Witch of the Wild Ways.
I would say, oh, at least I'll have the whole club looking at me, but...
Yeah.
You know there's no way I'll be going to a club. In this public health situation...
Just post a picture of Spiral with the Twitter caption, "She should have been at the club."
Hey, go for it. Hey everyone, in lieu of a friendly pod promo this episode, and in light of the global strike for Palestine and Gaza, I'd like to recommend some ways that you can help. You can strike from work or attend a protest in your area. You can boycott companies that support the genocide and shop local instead. You can donate to aid groups and funds towards buying eSIM cards for journalists. You can share information about the war on Gaza and or call or contact your political representatives. You can also follow media sources that are discussing the war, like Bisan's and Al Jazeera's reporting, or podcasts like The Electronic Infitada, Unsettled, and On the Nose. Everything that you can do helps, and we've got to stick together. So thank you, and keep up the good fight.